customers are distinctly like nicer when I've had my voice stripped like this. And I've noticed this when I've had my voice stripped like this at other serving jobs too. And I had a manager at one of my last serving jobs who, like, this lady manager who I remember her telling me after I referred a friend of mine and she interviewed her and loved her and was telling me about how much she loved my friend and was like, you know, she has this really like distinctively like lower voice. And I was like, I know, like that girl's really cool, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, you know, there's just something about women with lower register voices that's more trustworthy to me. And I've never forgotten that. And you know, it's the thing is though, it's just because she said it doesn't mean a lot of other people don't like subconsciously feel that way.
I was just going to say, there's definitely a psychology to that.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Cause you know, it's like, it's, there's, you know, I mean, when you hear a girl who talks in like a baby girl voice or something, and people judge her a certain way for that.
Even other women will judge you.
Oh, absolutely.
I have.
Like, it just, yeah,
if
I mean,
you can't help it. It sucks. I'm a bitch. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah. Internalized misogyny is
she should be allowed to have as small and cute a voice as she wants.
You know, do whatever.
Sometimes we're just frustrated about a lot of things and it's like, what's the nearest live target?
Yeah.
That I can take this out
stupid,
on.
Cute little voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody loves her. She's so freaking charming. Damn it. That's a movie I like to see.
No, totally fine.
So you could use a breather.
We could use a breather.
Yes.
We just decided we're trying something new, but sort of not new. Instead of it being a movie that neither one of us has seen, we're looking at two movies today. It's fun double feature. Oh my God, it's different.
Oh, we're doing
two things.
We're making it spicy.
Yes. So I've never seen Kiki's Delivery Service, except now I have. And you had never seen Princess Mononoke. And we're like, and now you have.
And now,
presumably.
Yeah. And we wanted to do a Miyazaki film, but then we wanted to also.
I think we were just both passionate about each of these movies.
Right.
And we were both like, oh, I really love this one. And like, oh, it's a shame I've seen it.
I'm excited to hear your thoughts, good or bad, about Kiki's Delivery Service.
Because,
it is something I'm passionate about.
Yeah, so. Totally. Yeah. It's easier on us. There will be less research. So slightly less factual stuff. So we're being kind to ourselves.
No,
this is self-care.
I love it.
Breather episode.
And you made a dope survey.
I did. I made us a worksheet.
Made us a worksheet.
Dear listener, we have a worksheet that it's just like in school when teacher would put on an A&E documentary and call that learning.
We got structure.
We have some structure to this.
I love it.
Should I run through it? Just here's like the overall, or we'll just top line.
Yeah.
So we're going to describe the movie in one word. We're going to compare what we expected with what we received. We're going to have a best scene, best line, best character. And even if we love this movie, we have to describe an alternate ending. I'm really excited for that.
Yes.
And then questions for the director. If we could ask them anything, what would we ask them?
Right.
And then, you know, our favorite question, would you watch it again? That's the run through. I won't read that every time. This is the first time and only time.
Done and done. I love it.
Everybody got that?
Yeah. We're not going back.
That's it. You should have written that down.
Should have written it down. We're only moving forward. This isn't being recorded.
No, the question is, who wants to go first this week?
That's a great question. Do you want to dive in with Kiki?
Sure.
And we go.
Yeah.
We'll start light and then.
Yeah. Fair.
Yeah, we'll start with a light appetizer.
Good
and go
point.
Into some dark meat.
Yeah. After. I don't. Dark meat. Kiki's. I mean, first of all, this was great. It was
delightful.
You know, it was really, really good.
I'm so glad you liked
just
it.
Just off the top.
Yay.
But like describing the movie in one word, and this is a very boring word, but maturation. I felt like it was a movie about maturation. Like, to go right into like, what did I expect? You know, I've seen Howl's Moving Castle, I've seen Mononoke, I've seen some other ones. Mm-hmm. And I think I was expecting, given the premise of like, oh, she's a witch, you know, I thought this was going to be so chock full of fantasy and like so layered with it. And I loved that it was actually so grounded in just like the experience of leaving home and finding a job or finding your niche, your little place in the world, and how it is a struggle for her, and just she feels lonely, and how important it is to like have somebody who believes in you and gives you a shot, and like the relationship of you to your own gifts, and like how it's both what makes her special, but it's also what separates her from people and makes her different.
Yes.
There was so much in this. Like, there were so many themes. It was so great. I watched the English dub. I mean, because Phil Hartman.
The vocal cast of Kiki's Delivery Service is one of things I love. I mean, there's so much to love about
that
movie.
Oh, and Trace McNeil. Fabulous.
You know, and then you got Kirsten Dunst.
She's great.
You got Jeanine Garofalo. Mm-hmm. Other people.
There were others, yeah.
Oh, Matt Lawrence. From the Lawrence brothers from the Disney, remember the 90s, TGIF?
I don't, but yeah, that is the right era, yeah. Because this came out in 89.
Was it Matt Lawrence or was it a different kid?
No, you're right. Because I saw that name and I'm like, who the fuck is that? I don't remember that
Jimbo.
Guy. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I missed that one. That's fine though. Yeah. I mean, it had a good cast. And I don't know. I debated it because there are merits to watching something with, I mean, I love a subtitled version. Some things don't translate really well. Like some films are distinct in their culture and there's just no way to, not no way, but it's very difficult. It always is. But, you know, I think like when you want to experience the whole frame and the whole picture and you want to really get to see, enjoy the imagery, I think like you got to put on the dub.
I really think that the English dub with Kiki's is pretty strong, actually.
It's excellent.
I think honestly... Yeah, I mean, you know, Phil Hartman with the cat, I think he really nails it.
Oh, he's perfect.
I think all of the characters and the cat, I think they capture the mood.
Oh, absolutely. You know? No, he completely understood the tone of the cat.
Like, I can't say the same about Princess Mononoke.
I will talk about
exactly,
that.
Exactly, not to jump you, but that's I like that you brought up
the casting.
The English dub.
Yeah.
It's pretty strong for Kiki.
It's really good. And I'm also like thinking about how, I felt like by the end of the 90s, at least this is from my own Midwestern perception, mm-hmm. I kind of felt like, I became aware of this filmmaker of Miyazaki and, you know, specifically through Princess Mononoke and just understanding like, there's this really sophisticated kind of approach to animation going on. This is like a full 10 years before that. And somebody had some good agents to get them hooked into something that was very cool, very hip and very like authentic. I mean, I was watching this and I did enjoy Mitchells versus the Machines, but I remember one of the things that I stumbled on with that was like, it was almost too perfect. You
right.
know? And this is like, it doesn't do that. It's like there's a simplicity and a stripped down quality to some of the things that they do, and it's not to say they're not complex or rich, but anyway.
No, but it's more understated with Kiki.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, and it's very ambiguous in terms of time and place.
I love that about it. Reminds me of like,
yeah,
it literally reminds me of Willy Wonka. Like it could be the same town as like the original Willy Wonka, where it's got that sort of Danishy type vibe.
Yeah, I felt like there was a clock tower. It felt kind of like like Pisa or something.
It could kind of place it anywhere,
and yet like it could have been parts of Japan. I don't know. It had this very, but it had a really like European medieval Renaissance,
a lot of cobblestone
vibe. But then there are radios and things and televisions, and so it's like, what era are we in?
A Zeppelin.
They kept calling something else.
Zamboni.
Zeppelin's right. Zamboni's what cleans nice. They had some other not. I should have written
that's
down.
That's the funnest name for cleaning, like
Zamboni.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been named for a guy.
They have
fun with
that.
Somebody's name, surely.
Zamboni.
Like Giuseppe Zamboni.
Yeah.
You know, it's some Italian guy who figured. I make him a machine.
Giuseppe Zamboni.
It's smoother ice.
You seen the Italian Elon Musk Twitter?
Yes.
It's smoother the ice. I don't pay the taxes. Oh,
mamma mia. Oh, damn it. That's
oopsies.
So good. No. I'm going to move forward and say, no. Well, the only thing I want to say, apart from all that stuff, was that, the fact that it was grounded in realism, especially the notion of, like, things taking time.
Yeah.
Nothing happens quickly. And I mean that in the best way. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't succeed immediately. Everything is a struggle. Like, everything is hard. And it's when she's feeling kind of dejected that, you know, hug your kitty. poor girl. For me, though, on that note, the best scene for me wasn't a particularly joyful scene, but it, her in the rain delivering the pie or the what was it?
It was a pot pie.
Yeah, I was trying. It was a specific one. It was like a herring pot pie,
herring.
Which did kind of sound revolting, to be honest. But but like she goes through this whole thing of, you know, delivering this this dish a grandmother made for her granddaughter's birthday. She can't be there. Here, you'll take this dish. There's more to the pre-story there, but that whole experience of her going through the cold and the wet, and of course it makes her sick, and then she shows up and the girl just doesn't give a fuck. Like, and
I know that girl's such a brat.
Yeah. And like kind of looks at Kiki like
she's my grandma's stupid pies.
Right. And like, ugh, like, oh, you work. Ugh.
Oh, that reminds me of another vocal talent.
Yeah.
As the lady who does the voice of Bobby Hill.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Forgot. She's the little boy. Yeah. Pamela Adlon. But I think at the time she was Pamela Siegel.
There you go.
Like, was how she was credited. No, I recognized it immediately.
Come on, I just can't move.
Yeah.
Move.
It was great. Yeah. No, I heard that. Again, like great vocal casting.
Right.
Like, these are people who do a lot of... Anyway. My favorite line is probably from my favorite character, which is Gigi the cat.
Yeah.
Of course.
Great cat.
But like the moment where she's been shown to like this little attic room that she's going to stay in, he's like, oh, this is quaint. It's like filthy. And I laughed by myself alone in a room at that. I thought that was good. But as like a second runner up is that moment where the cat spies that mug in the store.
Oh, yeah.
That has a black cat on it. And he says, Kiki, it's me.
And so
of course,
cute.
You see it on the conveyor belt later. Like, she's, of course, going to buy it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I've had that experience in Daiso 1,000 times.
That's, I love it.
And I felt like if you would shop with your cat, that's exactly how they would react to those things.
Me.
That's me.
That's a cat.
Get it.
That me.
That's me.
It me.
And it made me wish I could shop with my cat.
No.
I was like,
I know. People shop with their dogs.
That's at the dog store.
If it's Joan Crawford, you know, beautiful, beautiful big girl. Yeah. She, big girl on your arm like that. Just like, just get a little bit of a...
14 pounds.
Get a little arm workout.
Yeah, she's heavy. Like, at a certain point.
She's
like,
gorgeous.
Yeah, I love
her. She's absolutely gorgeous. We're staring at her right now.
Yeah, she's sleeping.
Yeah, she got treats and now she's resting.
Yeah. I'm going to move on to describing an alternate ending, which was, okay, there were those... The woman who made the herring pot pie, this older woman, she has a housekeeper or somebody who lives with her, who was voiced by Edie McClurg, who I fucking love, right? She's in Ferris Bueller, she's the secretary. You know,
exactly.
The ticket agent in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Anyway, there were like a couple of like scenes in there where I kind of like, something about the way they were positioned, the way Kiki was in the middle, that I'm like, are they gonna like kidnap her? Like, are they gonna like murder her? So I think in my alternate version, the old woman and her housekeeper are murderers. They close in on Kiki in prison and torture her. Roll credits.
Amazing.
That's my alternate ending.
What a sharp turn. I like we had fun with it because I also have a couple troll pictures from Mononoke, so I appreciate
Yes. Okay.
I appreciate
that's
it.
My one thing. I couldn't get further than that.
No, that's great.
Gigi just forgets all about her when he meets his girlfriend Kat, so he's gone.
Yeah.
So my questions for the director, I realize there is no when and where, but I want to ask, like, when and where in your head is this taking place?
Right.
And also, why did Gigi lose his voice and never get it back?
Right.
Because the girl got her powers back, but then...
But we didn't hear him.
We never heard his voice again.
We didn't hear his voice again. In my mind, I thought maybe it was like an implied type of situation.
I guess.
Or her just like developing her own independence.
Maybe. She didn't need him anymore.
That's something I've thought about.
Okay.
I've definitely considered that. I think like...
Because it's
one of those things
you
draw your own... Yeah, you draw your own conclusion. And my thinking is either like... Mm-hmm. Either she does hear him again and we just... It's just implied because like if we saw her flying and she's got that, then she's probably okay. Or just that she's developed more confidence and independence that she's, you know, she doesn't, her cat doesn't have to be her best friend. And not that it's wrong to have a cat as a best friend, trust me.
It's wonderful.
But trust me. But she's grown into her, you know, now she's got other new friends.
Yes.
And he's got his girlfriend and they're kind of.
Well, when he stopped being able to talk to her, I was like, oh, that's a baby that looks like him. And that's the reveal is that like he already has got kids.
He's already got a kid. Like, has a lot of time passed.
I know, but I just felt like that was what was going on. Yeah. I'm like, it's not actually him. It's his baby.
That is very sad when she can't hear him talk. I'm like, oh, that's got to be so lonely.
That broke my heart. I hated that. I mean, I loved it, but I hated it. Kiki's Delivery Service is a movie about a young witch, which that's just it. She's a girl. And
Kiki.
Her Kiki's the witch. Her mother's a witch. And when you turn 13, at some point, you have to go off for a year to train alone. You know, it's part of like leaving home and doing the thing. So it's just about her leaving home, going out in the world and trying to find sort of her power, her skill, what's her special thing that she can do, and falls into this sort of line of work of being a delivery service because she can fly her broom. And that's really the story. I mean, there's more to it than that, but
it's
about finding your place.
It's extremely charming.
It's incredibly charming.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Yeah, definitely. No, and I would watch it again.
It's like the perfect counter movie to Mononoke, I felt like. As I was watching mine, I was like, yeah, we got sweet and salty. Sweet for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
I mean,
sweet and savory.
The sadness of Mononoke is part of why I love it. But right. I realize like it hits so much harder right like now than it did in like 1999 or whatever year it came.
There's a lot of relevance to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than
ready
ever.
Ready to get into it?
Let's do this. Yeah. I watched Princess Mononoke in 1999 is when it came out. And I, too, watched the English dub. I will say I like Kiki's more.
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
But that's not to say that I don't have a lot of like respect for this. I've only watched three of his films now. That these two cool. and Spirited Away, actually.
Oh, all right.
I thought I'd watched something else of his, but I don't think I actually have. So
cool.
I'm not gonna lie. This is third out of the three, but that's these are three excellent films.
Yeah, seriously.
So yeah, you know, it's not really a fair ranking for what it's worth. This is a great film. It's set.
People are gonna riot now.
Oh no. Yeah. No,
over this.
I can understand if you're passionate. There's a lot to connect with, you know, in this film. And it's essentially about, well, it's set in the 14th century. And it's in the, I think it's 14th century Japan, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, and it's set in the forest. And essentially it used to be that animals and spirits and humans could all live in harmony. And then there's this great divide. And now they're at war with each other. And this film is essentially building up to a great big showdown between these three factions. Sort of two factions, because like the gods and spirits of the forest are kind of on the side of the animals, of course. So it's kind of them versus the humans and their like weapons and iron.
Yeah.
But the story focuses on Ashitaka, who is this... He's 17, and he's the last prince of this forgotten, very obscure tribe that lives separately from all this drama, the Inoshi tribe. But then one day this boar that's like a demonic boar comes through, and Ashitaka, you know, defeats the boar and saves his people, but the boar gets like a good bite out of his arm. And that bite turns into this like demonic infection that starts to every so often flare up. And it essentially acts as this like metaphor for trauma, depression, and rage and anger.
And they kind of tell them it will kill you eventually.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to eventually take his soul. And it's this whole thing. So he specifically is going out to the forest where all the drama is to hopefully find the forest god, this deer-like forest god that's going to help heal his wound and restore his spirit and help him see through eyes that are not clouded by hate, as it were. But on this journey, he comes across... He comes across a number of folks that
a cast of characters,
if you will. And I think one thing that I really like, I mean, it's a much more complex story than all of this.
No, but
I don't want to spoil anymore.
But
this is the setup of this is the expositional information I want to give.
I think that was it's actually a pretty complex amount of shit. I think you did that well.
The best I can do without like literally just starting to tell you the whole
thing.
No,
I think that was perfect.
Awesome.
No. Like I'm like, yeah, that is it.
It's a chewy movie, you know, it's a lot to chew on.
Yeah, it's epic.
It truly is an epic, and he's on this journey. He meets all these folks. One of the things I appreciated is that everyone is morally gray. There's good and bad to every single character. There is no, I would argue, there's no distinct villain. There are definitely antagonists. But I will say, I'm going to dive right into the my survey.
The worksheet.
One word, I guess, would be, epic. Epic is a good word for it. It's pretty violent from the get, but it's not absurdly bloody. Like it's not indulgent in the gore. And something that I read about why Miyazaki allowed for some of it, because maiming and decapitation and whatnot, and and I think I appreciated that he wanted to create something that was he wanted younger viewers still for this, like not young kids, but like young adults, I think is what he said. And especially those that were going through depression. Because this is sort of, I felt that like a very complex metaphor for coping with the fact that the world is imperfect. And there's evil in all of us, but there's also the capacity for good.
Yeah.
And that sometimes bad things happen or things don't work out. For the majority of the characters in this film, things don't work out how they want them to.
Yeah.
It's a bittersweet ending of sorts, but it's also a film that I think very well captures the idea of learning to accept that there is, there's cruelty and to try to still find love, to still find the love and light. Yeah. Expectations. More Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, right.
I really thought this was going to be about her.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be from her POV.
Yeah.
And it was instead from Ashitaka, who he falls in love with her, and like
who wouldn't?
Wolf
girl.
Yeah, Wolf girl. Come on. I mean, the way she handles a knife, let me tell you.
I'm just saying, like, I saw that movie at that right age.
Yeah.
And it was like, I wanted so badly to be her. Like, to live in the woods.
She's very badass.
Like, oh my God.
Very
badass. She's so badass.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, yeah.
I hate humans.
I love it.
It's been memed so much.
I hate humans. No, that's about. I hate humans too. Let me tell you, girl. Yeah. So what my expectation was more of a story that focused on
a girl, a princess.
Maybe about her upbringing or about how and why. And what?
Yeah, we don't really find out. Much.
I didn't really get. I didn't really get to build as much of a relationship with her, I guess, as I wanted.
Fair.
I was with Ashitaka for a lot of this movie and was like, when's the princess coming?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he's the vehicle.
It started like, I was a little like, okay. And that's what I received.
Sure.
Was really more like Ashitaka and the time that he met the princess for a little bit.
Yeah. He fell hard.
Yeah, dude.
He fell hard.
Yeah, he did. You're beautiful. Yeah.
She's like, ah! Spit blood in your face.
Best scene for me, I would say, all the battle sequences. I thought the fight sequence when Princess Mononoke first comes to this Iron Village.
Yeah.
And she's seeking.
Because she has the clay mask.
Yeah, she has the mask. And then she you see that she basically has like these superpowers because she's been taken care of by one of the gods of the forest, essentially, one of the wolf gods. So I guess that gives her the ability to kind of jump like Spider-Man.
Yeah,
she's got some hardcore parkour going on about her, and like the way she's just jumping over people and clearing and all of that was really badass.
So nimble. I just loved that sound of her running on the tiles on the roof.
Yeah, I love that. It's very intense, and she's fleet feet.
Yes.
Fleet feet.
Yeah.
I liked her showdown with Lady Eboshi quite a bit, and I would say. Also, whenever the forest god appeared, whenever there was like a stillness there was some sort of and like that first appearance when he comes through and heals him.
Yeah.
But not his scar.
Yeah. Right.
No.
No, you gotta go to another guy for that.
No, you gotta give you a referral for that. but that was when you first see that forest god, that was pretty cool.
I agree.
The best lines for me. I liked the moment when Lady Eboshi in the battle sequence. I mean, there's a lot of really beautiful. Actually, you know what? Okay, no, I actually have like a very
you can list
endearing.
Them all.
I've got three, like two lines. I only wrote like half lines of because they're just. I liked that one snippet.
Sure.
And then there's this one moment that is reflective of actually my favorite character who was Lady Eboshi.
She's the best. Like, oh my God.
I felt like she was the most developed character. I felt like this was more her movie than anything. We spent so much more time with her really than the princess, and I found her to be far more interesting.
Yeah,
I really like when a movie presents an antagonist that's not really that she provides it.
This she's town
loves her. She's saved people. She she protects this whole so many of these like lepers and protects them.
Well,
and
she employs and women.
She employs women, and like it's a very. I really like there's a lot about the dynamic of that community that's very admirable,
and
actually.
And that's like, I think part of what makes that movie so great is that they're good and evil is not specific. Like the closest thing to evil is that little fat monk who is just so like, which by the way, did you like the casting for him?
Billy Bob Thornton. I found him very charismatic. That was the first time I was kind of like, oh, okay, we've got a little charisma going on here.
Yeah, right? He was great.
But I will say voice cast was I don't know. I don't have anything against Claire Danes, but I really don't have anything
She's
for
the weakest,
her either.
Though. She's the weakest.
The thing is, like, I feel like she would be so cool in real life.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I rewatched Romeo plus Juliet, which is not a fair assessment of her talent.
No.
But then I've also, you know, like, I've seen her in a couple other indie films. I've seen her like opposite Billy Crudup, you know, the whole.
Yes, the drama.
Yeah, the drama there. I've seen her in that and the, is it not Stealing Beauty? Or it's the one where she's the Shakespeare and, you know.
Yeah.
He's this incredible, like, actor. He plays women, but she wants to play women. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't particularly blown away by her then. And then the voice acting here was a little, it felt like a little mismatched, whereas I felt like the charisma of Kirsten, like, I felt like Kirsten in Kiki's, it's tough with some of these, with the animation style, trying to capture that. There's a very innocent delivery. There's a certain delivery style that's like, I don't know. And I actually thought Minnie Driver did a really great job.
Minnie Driver's a standout.
Yeah, she, as far as voice acting goes, I think she really nailed it. She's one of my favorites. And going back to my favorite quote, actually,
sorry, I pulled you away from that.
No, don't be sorry. I wanted to go on about the voice cast, but my favorite quote actually comes from one of the lepers, because Ashitaka is pretty pissed at Lady Eboshi when he follows her to where she's building these guns to shoot for this impending battle. Yeah. And the leper's name is Osa. He says, "Young man, like you, I know what rage feels like and grief and helplessness. Life is suffering. It is hard. The world is cursed. But you still find reasons to keep living." And that hit me in the gut in the same way as like Drive My Car did.
Yep.
The idea that, and I think this is, to me, the best line that encapsulates, I think, the movie's heart. Yeah,
totally.
The idea that the world can be really cruel and painful and violent, and yet there is still value to be had, to keep going, to endure, which everybody experiences significant loss. There is arguably like no winners at the end of this battle, really.
No.
And at the same time, everybody's just like, all right, we go on, we will rebuild. And that's what Lady Eboshi's like.
Yeah.
She loses an arm. She's like, all right, we're going to rebuild. Yeah. We're going to come back and we're going to be stronger.
Yeah.
And I really liked her. Oh, and I also like Toki, who's one of the female.
Doesn't Jada Pinkett Smith do her voice?
That is Jada Pinkett, and she's great.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love when her husband comes back. Ashitaka had saved him after he almost died. And she's like, has an injury. Like, great, now I have to do all the work. Now, what are you going to do? She's very sassy.
Yeah, I like her.
I did like that.
It's good. The men in Miyazaki movies often are very dopey. Yeah. They're kind of like harmless, but dopey.
Yeah. I liked the, you know, it's like in Kiki's, the bread bake, the himbo and that.
Oh yeah.
He never talks, but he's one of the best characters.
He's so, like, yeah, he's got that like triangle body. Yeah. I don't know.
So all his lines are just,
perfect. That's all we want.
No, there's a very feminist, this film.
Oh, incredibly so.
I enjoyed it, but it is also heavier fare.
Definitely.
And there are parts of it that are a little slower, but again, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's as it should be.
Yeah.
This movie does run about 2.5 hours, so it is, yeah. It's
an epic.
It's an epic, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say my alternate ending would be, I have two of them. One of them is the battle sequence, like right before they go to battle, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, or like we see the whole battle thing.
Yeah.
And then maybe it would just like all of a sudden just like cut back to Ashitaka, like in Twilight at the end of the series, where like there's this whole battle sequence, but then you realize it was just the character that can like predict, that can see the future, mm-hmm. like sees how violent the battle gets. And is able to like convince everybody to find peace.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying?
Very sweet.
Like a cheesy, it's like a very non-climactic end. Like it's the corniest ending of Twilight is that like this whole epic battle never actually happened.
It's all just prognosticated.
I saw what was going to happen.
I didn't know that.
And we can't fight.
Oh my God.
We need to find peace. Like something like that.
That's ridiculous.
And like, what if that happened in this? Like, I feel like it almost could have in a sense, because there are a few lines that are a bit pithy in the sense of like, we need to find love. Like he said, he talks about love and not letting hate overcome you.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, like, especially if this is for like ideally targeted towards adolescents.
Yeah.
Learning these themes. There's some.
Yeah. I think at moments like you could accuse it of being like pabulum, but
sure.
I think it's made up for in all of the sort of depressiveness.
No, I think there's enough nuance that counteracts it.
Yeah, totally.
I was officially won over once the leper gave that line.
Yeah, yeah.
I really.
You're like, yep.
I really,
that's
like,
the movie.
I really, that drove the point home to me that I was like, oh, I see the idea of moral ambiguity.
Yep.
And how he's fighting this cursed arm, but he's also simultaneously learning how to live with it. This is clearly like coping with
addiction,
mental illness, mm-hmm. trauma, rage, guilt, resentment.
No, I think just you're so many the thought that he was trying to give young adults, like something to project themselves onto and see that, you know, to see themselves in that struggle, or to see themselves like, oh, I can relate to this, or I can relate to, I mean, even, you know, San or Princess, you know, she's like, she doesn't really belong in either place as a result, you know, and that kind of fucks her up in the end, you know? And I don't know. There was something kind of sad about that.
It's true. It's true. There's a lot of melancholy.
Yeah.
But there is also the idea that with death comes life. They even say that at the end. It's like, oh, well, you know, now a new forest can, now new life can grow, new vegetation. And then, my other alternate ending was another troll ending, is that all of a sudden, you know, like a park ranger rolls up and it's like the end of the M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, and surprise, it's the modern day. Now this is the real world we're living in right now.
Oh man, a village ending. I like that. When in doubt, just do the village ending.
Right.
Like just have a park ranger drive up.
When in doubt, just like throw in something super anachronistic, like all of a sudden a cell phone goes off.
Yep. Oh shit.
Oh no.
Camera swings around to the crew. The whole thing.
And then
they've been here the whole time.
And then question for the director would just, my main one, I guess, would have been like, would there have been any interest in perhaps telling the story, sort of like a prequel of Princess Mononoke? I would have been interested in seeing
like her origin.
Her origin. I think that would have been, it could have been an instance where a prequel would have been interesting and not and not also have taken away.
Not been
from
derivative. Yeah, that's such an interesting idea.
Because I really did want to see, you know, you have the Moro, the wolf god, talks about how her parents, she saw them in the wood, and they in fear, like threw the baby Can you just picture that first? That's so fucked up. And it's also, take my baby. And they just ran away. And also another one of the lines I had written was, you know, Moro was talking about this and that, explaining this about Princess Mononoke and how awful her parents are. And then, you know, she says, my poor, ugly, beautiful daughter is neither human nor wolf. And I liked that very dispassionate, like, she's so angry and is constantly talking about how much she wants to kill Ashitaka, how much she hates humans, but she also has this unyielding patience about her. And then another quote, just one more quick quote, and then I'm all spent, is going back to Lady Eboshi. Just the balls it takes to turn to your people and, like, right when you see, like, the most epic forest god and be like, watch closely. This is how you kill a god.
Oh, my God.
And then she fucking kills him. Like, and she does it. And then hell breaks loose. And she's still like, no, we're going to get that fucking head. We're going to get it. We're going to do this.
I'm going to girl boss the shit out of this.
And then, you know, like, literally slice off the wolf's head. Oh, man, now I'm spoiling shit.
No, anyway, it's okay.
But
that's a good line. Like, I was going to say, Mononoke is like, It's like maybe a stupid thing to say, but everybody dies, by the way. It's so cinematic, though. Like, that the moment where Ashitaka cuts off his top knot, like the riding out of the village. Like, there's elements of this that have, like, a operatic or old Western drama kind of
feel. I could totally see this get, like, adapted into an opera.
Right?
I could totally see this as an opera. I mean,
it is operatic as fuck. Like, this is about, like, the end of the world and forces and I seem to remember hearing something on another podcast talking about Miyazaki, how at some point he sort of, you know, used to make films that were very, very optimistic because he wanted kids to have that and enjoy it. But at a certain point, he, given the way the world is, you know, he kind of decided to start making things a little more like in this Mononoke vibe that are like, acknowledge the difficulties.
Presenting that the world can be cruel and life is difficult.
Yeah, and
again,
and that, perhaps, like, that's an important thing to address here.
You find reasons to keep going.
And I agree. It's funny. There are some of those, like, the violence of it. I forget pretty quickly how, like, he shoots an arrow and a whole fucking arm flies off.
Yeah, arm, I mean, and then another guy loses his head. And like, it just kind of boom, boom, boom. Yeah, it's quick. This is the movie.
It's intense. But, I mean, I really love Billy Bob Thornton in the dub.
He's great. As far as secondary characters go, it was much needed charisma that, like, I was certainly starved for.
Yes, because Ashitaka is so serious and so, like,
another example of a morally ambiguous character that I appreciated as well, because he helps Ashitaka in a bind with the gold and when he first comes to that village to try and trade for rice, and the girl is like, oh, what's this thing? And the guy's like, it's gold. Like,
yeah, bitch. It's gold.
Dummy. I'll give you like some cash and this gold from
you. I'll cash that check.
You know, like, he like saves his butt and you know, at then the very end with the you know, like, he's when he's presented with a quandary, a very intense quandary, he steps up to it. I like those kinds of they're almost sort of like roguish, considerably less attractive Han Solo-esque characters.
Totally. I know what you're saying.
That are like, I'm out for myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked that there was a figure that was like that, because they're really covering all their bases here.
Yeah, it's like, we need to present these varying degrees of kinds of morality and the ambiguity of it, like you were saying. Yeah. Like, everything is a gray area. I also remember my brother must have had, like, a copy on DVD, because I seem to remember, like, special features and watching. And I guess Billy Bob Thornton, who is a drummer, or he's done that at least professionally, like, they said that he really found the rhythm of the dub, like, and everything really quickly.
Him and Minnie, like, really stood out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I felt like Billy Crudup and Claire Danes were just so dry.
So dry.
And Billy, it was all right. Like, it was passable, but it was also, again, like, this is obviously not a movie I would be watching and hoping you're going to get some sort of romantic satisfaction. Well, shouldn't really be watching like almost any Miyazaki movie for that.
Yeah.
But to my understanding, at least,
I mean,
but
I'm struggling to think of.
Yeah, I think definitely I was not really ever sold on the romantic connection that those two characters had. The baby bird feeding I thought was endearing, but I certainly didn't feel any sort of
I didn't think that was particularly romantic.
Yeah, I didn't feel romance for that.
That was more like a nurse with a patient.
Yeah, it was very like, she was mothering him.
Yeah, mothering.
It was a tender moment from someone.
It was tender,
who'd shown a lot of brass and and teeth up until that point.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Cause she's kind of like bones for jewelry, you know, like cool blood and shit. Would you watch it again?
I don't think I would readily put, I would much sooner put on Kiki's or Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I really, the charm and whimsy is like a lot more palatable, I think, in both of those films.
Totally.
But that's not to say that this is not an incredible film that if it was on, I wouldn't get engrossed in quickly.
No. And it has moments of lightness, but you're right. It's such a, I think I really just probably as a moody teenager, just like loved how melancholy it was.
No, it's, I think it, like you said, yeah, it really hits the nail on the head. It covers a lot of really, it's a great film to teach someone coming of age what those feelings are. Like to put words to those feelings and to find acceptance or to like a path to acceptance, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great, I highly recommend.
Yeah.
But cool. Yeah. Oh, and also I do, going back to Kiki's.
Go back to Kiki.
Sorry. I just want to say.
Yeah.
I want to at some point bake one of those herring pies.
Really?
I have watched like TikToks and YouTube of it. It actually just kind of looks like a chicken pot pie.
Yeah, I think herring, that is what it is.
The herring is, it's a strongly flavored, it's a salty fish, but I was looking at all the other ingredients and I think once you put like all the...
It would make sense.
The creaminess and the potato and carrot or whatever, it seems like it... I'd be down to try it.
I shouldn't judge it.
No, but it does sound
it
like...
It just is like...
I could see why the girls... another herring pie.
Oh, gross.
But at the same time, Miyazaki knows how to make food that I wouldn't normally eat look edible.
I know.
Like the jerky that Mononoke baby bird feeds Ashitaka. I mean,
where do I get that?
That kind of looked like... that looked like forbidden pork belly.
Look good. No, I know what you mean. There's times... I think there's even like Twitter accounts about like anime food.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And like, oh, damn it. Do not ever show me like an anime where they go eat hot pot.
I know, right?
Like, just those words together.
Even
just
when
now.
I see like a porridge or something, like, you know, and they're eating the rice.
Gave, and like they gave the kitty cat porridge.
You know,
like, don't eat it too fast. It's hot. Yeah. Okay. Well, this was a good breather.
Yes, I enjoyed.
We'll be back in full force next week.
Rock and roll.
Thanks
for checking us out. Be sure to leave us a review. And or tell your friends.
Tell a buddy.
Tell a buddy, tell a tubby.